Member Week is back at Lowe's with big savings for pros. Now through October 15th, my Lowe's Pro Rewards members get up to 40% off hundreds of items like paint, tools, building materials, and more. Plus, get free standard shipping. Shop these exclusive member-only savings before they're gone. Not a rewards member? Join for free today. Free standard shipping not available in Alaska and Hawaii. Exclusions and more terms apply. Loyalty program subject to terms and conditions. Details at lowes.com/terms. Subject to change.
Entering Kenmore. Doors will open on the left.
How's it going, everyone? Welcome to episode 30 of Entering Kenmore. I am David Azer alongside Zach Coe. Zach, a little bit of an underwhelming road trip out west for the Red Sox. They ended up going 2-4, admittedly against playoff caliber teams, but you definitely wanted to see a bit more out there. So how are we feeling? Where are we at with this team?
Yeah, I mean, I'm pretty frustrated, to be honest. It's obviously not the outcome you were looking for, and two playoff teams, and I know that they have the 27th hardest schedule the rest of the way, but I would have liked to see them at least split this road trip, win a series, lose a series, and like 500 you would have been able to deal with, but 2-4, it just feels worse than 500. Well, probably because it is, but
yeah. Well, I think the one silver lining is you really didn't move a whole lot in the wild card race. You're still a game and a half up on the Yankees, and now the Mariners are on a tear, but they have lost two in a row, so they're 2.5 games up on the Yankees, so you're only a game back of them. It did feel like they weren't really out of any of these games. It was a lot of, you know, one-run losses. They ended up losing another one in extra innings against the Padres. So I think it's fair to say that they're still a playoff-caliber team, but they may not be the World Series contender we may have thought.
Yeah, no, definitely not. And I mean, it goes back to so many different things, an incomplete trade deadline, an incomplete offseason. If we're being realistic with each other, like, we still have a roster that makes no sense. I mean, how many times have we talked about how the roster construction makes zero sense over the course of the year? It's not a shot at the current team. Like, they're full of good players. I think they're a good team, but they've just been failed by the front office time and time again.
That's really been the story of the last couple of years too, I would argue. The whole outfield logjam conversation we've had all offseason, it's still pretty prominent right now where you're having Masataka Yoshida go in there, and he was a little better throughout this road trip, but even still, like, that's not the type of production you want from your DH. And then when you see them rotate in Jaron Duran at DH, it just seems like a much more complete lineup. So, I mean, we've both been beating the drum that Yoshida's been the odd man out in this lineup. They were perfectly content with not playing him and sort of phantom ILing him while Devers was here. Then once they moved him, they were like, oh, he's miraculously recovered. And now he's back smacking balls into the ground pretty much every AB. So it's getting tough to watch with him specifically at this point, but also just an inconsistent lineup overall.
I mean, they were beating that drum all offseason that they don't want Masataka Yoshida. They tried like hell to trade him. They had a deal that they should have done with Masataka Yoshida in it, and we'll get into that. They wanted to keep David Hamilton, and that's why they didn't make that deal. They were more willing to trade Tristan Casas this offseason than they were David Hamilton, which is a problem in and of itself. But yeah, it's just, say what you will about Masataka Yoshida, and Carrabba said this, and I couldn't agree more with it. I can't wait to root for Masataka Yoshida on somebody else's team because I'm so sick of watching him on this team. His aura is incredible. The form running the bases is awesome. He, by all accounts, seems like a great guy that everybody loves. He's just not a fit for this roster, even a little bit. And it's one of those things where we all shit on the scouts and the executives when they signed Yoshida that were like, this is a massive overpay. Like, I can't believe they gave him that much. He's a poor defensive player. He's not as good of a hitter as they say. Those people were right. Like, I think we can comfortably say that at this point. Those people that said Masataka Yoshida was a massive overpay for this team were 100% correct.
it was a little bit of a head scratcher when they made that deal. And now you're just seeing that he really has no spot here anymore. That's the toughest part, is if you weren't going to move one of your other outfielders, then throughout the trade deadline, there were rumors floating around that Duran was pretty likely to move. Obviously, that didn't happen. And now you're left with this lineup that you really just don't have a spot for anyone. And you're forced to put your gold glove center fielder at second base, who he's okay, but I would feel much more comfortable if he was roaming center field every day and not having to figure out multiple positions at once. Like, it's the same kind of deal with Christian Campbell, I feel like.
Yeah, and not to mention you had to trade your best player.
Yeah.
Like I feel like I don't want to harp on the Devers trade, but I was on with Dan Ball on Sunday, and he mentioned that he didn't miss Devers one bit. And I was like, not missing Devers one bit is a little bit much. And he was like, okay, so like, walk me through it. Why do you still miss him? And I was like, well, like, you still don't really have that big bopper in your lineup that when you absolutely need a hit, you know that he's going to come through for you like you had with Devers. You don't have a guy where it's like, okay, here's Devers. Like, here's the guy that you need to game plan around. He's like, well, you have Bregman, you have Roman Anthony. And I was like, of course you have those guys. But Bregman's one thing. Roman Anthony's still a rookie. Like, he's at some point going to struggle, we think. At least history tells us that. Even the best players in the league struggle when teams make adjustments to them when they first come up. If you still had Rafael Devers in this lineup, you're top three. I said it before. Anthony, Bregman, Devers. Fill in the rest from there. That is a very, very formidable top three. And, like, maybe the best first three in a lineup in baseball right now. But instead, you mishandled things from the jump, and it goes back to the offseason, an incomplete offseason. And it's just, it's unfortunate. And someone, a texter, was like, he hasn't done anything in San Francisco, and it was addition by subtraction. Like, how do you not get that? I said it over and over again. I put way more onus on the team than I do the player to handle things in a professional manner. Like, I just do. This all goes back to the way that Craig Breslow mishandled the entire Bregman signing, the entire offseason, and the entire communication process with Devers. It's frustrating. I don't want to harp on it because we have a different team to talk about. Rafael Devers isn't here, but also to the notion that he's not doing anything. In the month of August, he's got a 944 OPS. So I'd say that's doing something.
He's definitely turned a corner. And I think even the Devers trade aside, you didn't add anybody significant at the trade deadline into your lineup. And that's kind of right. What both you and I were holding out for. It's like, okay, they traded Devers. Maybe they bring someone else who can replace that power production in the middle of their lineup. And you saw Josh Naylor, Eugenio Suarez, a couple other names just go other places for pretty comfortable deals.
Not overwhelming deals.
Exactly. Yeah. So you could have made up for that production if you just pushed a little harder at the trade deadline, and maybe we wouldn't be having this exact conversation right now. But even still, like, Suarez hasn't been great in Seattle since he's been there. I think Naylor's been pretty good, but aside from that, like, not a whole lot of bats ended up moving. So
even if it was just Ryan O'Hearn, honestly, it would have been underwhelming, but at least would have been a bat. It would have made up for Abraham Toro in your lineup, who's given you nothing.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, the whole conversation we've had pretty much all season was, is the platoon of Romy Gonzalez and Abraham Toro enough to carry you through a whole season at first base? And I think we're finding out pretty fast that it's not. At least Toro. I think Romy's still been pretty good.
But yeah, no, Romy's been good, but with the hole at second base now, and call it a hole, call it whatever, and I know that plenty of people have harped on it, but with Zaidan Rafaela there, and Lou called him the best solution that they had for second base, the bat is awful. At second base for Zaidan Rafaela. In 17 games, 62 plate appearances, 59 ABs, 136, 177, 136. Good for a 313 OPS. Yeah, and the defense is ticked down. Mm-hmm. Like he's a fine defender at second base. Like, he's obviously not as good as he is in center field, but which it's very funny that Cora started the Zaidan Rafaela should still win the gold glove in center field campaign. Like, Alex, if he's that good out there, just play him out there. Like, mm-hmm. I don't understand it. Like, all this to get Masataki Yoshida in the lineup. Like, It's just so frustrating. A guy like, again, Masataki Yoshida is a fine player. He just doesn't make sense for this team. Just let him be a bench bat. He's on the team. You're paying him no matter what. Why are you not putting out your best lineup every single night to get this guy in the lineup? It's a 99 OPS plus this year. He's a league average hitter. We're doing all these types of mental gymnastics and playing arguably the best center fielder in baseball at second base to get a 99 OPS plus in the lineup. Like, it just doesn't make sense to me at all.
Yeah, and especially, I know the metrics don't really back this up, but Duran has been pretty shaky in left field. So you move him to center, and maybe he's a little bit better out there, but I'd much prefer to see him at DH on a nightly 100%. Basis. So, like, your solution is right in front of you. It just doesn't seem like they'll do it maybe one night out of the week, and then Yoshida's right back in there for a majority of the games. It's just, I don't understand what's stopping them. Like, you see this, and I don't want to say the season's slipping away here, but you're definitely falling back down to earth after a couple long winning streaks. It's like something needs to give here, and they just don't seem to want to change that part of their lineup. I don't get it.
Yeah, I mean, it's their bat short. We've been saying it. They're a second baseman short, and we've seen it. We've both seen enough Abe Toro, but I think it's underrated how poor they are on the road. 27-34 on the road so far. And you can say, oh, they played the Padres and the Astros, and those are playoff caliber teams. Well, guess where you have to play and who you have to play in the playoffs? The Astros. Obviously not the Padres. We had this conversation when they played the Cubs, Dodgers, and Phillies. But these are the caliber teams that you're seeing. And their environments are only going to tick up that much more once you get to the playoffs. Like, eventually they're going to have to win games on the road. What if they don't get home field advantage? I mean, sure, they might be that top wild card, so you have a home field advantage in that first series. Other than that, you don't have it as a wild card. So you either need to win the division and come away with a top two seed in the AL, or you need to figure out a way to win on the road.
Yeah, and if the season ended right now, then you're the fifth seed. So you don't have home field advantage all throughout the playoffs. So it's definitely something of note. And, you know, I've seen the struggles at Fenway firsthand. It's been a brutal stretch pretty much the last 2-3 years at this point, and they've turned a corner this year. But, you know, what happens if that changes? Like, then you can't win on the road, you can't win at home, and then I don't want to hit the panic button. Like, where are you at in terms of panic button? Like, what would you say, 1 out of 10?
Like a 5? Like,
yeah.
Since the deadline, I've readjusted my expectations for this team. Like, I thought with the right moves at the deadline, they could be a legitimate World Series contender. Instead, they gave us Steven Matz and Dustin May, who, to his credit, Dustin May was good in start number 2. I feel like it's a missed opportunity. Like, I think they're probably a playoff team. Like, at this point, if they don't make the playoffs, I think it's a pretty colossal collapse.
Yeah.
And one that, like, I don't know how you do it, because, like, I don't think you fire Breslow, because who would take the job? Alex Cora is not going anywhere, obviously. So I don't know what you do, but, like, something would have to change for them to miss the playoffs, or if they do miss the playoffs. Like, I think they're a good team. If they play the Yankees in the wild card round, they're probably a division series exit. Other than that, I could see them just getting bounced in the wild card.
Yeah, I don't disagree there. It's helpful that a lot of these teams that are sort of on the cusp here, like the Guardians, I'm sorry, they don't scare me. And maybe I shouldn't say that before the upcoming series. I think it's in like a couple weeks. Maybe it's in September. Yeah, first week of September there. So maybe I shouldn't say that before that happens, but the Rangers also have fallen back down to earth a bit. And then there's kind of a drop off here with the Royals, Angels, Rays. It's like, you're pretty comfortably in that wild card race right now, but you can't keep dropping series like this. And I know it's against good teams and the schedule thins out a lot as we head into September, but it's still a little bit worrisome to me. Like, I would say I'm probably around a 5 as well on the panic level, but that could change pretty fast.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned it. None of those teams really scare me around the, like, peripherals of the wild card race. So that's why I still think you're a playoff team, but it's just like, once you play those good teams, like, you haven't shown the ability to win on the road against those good teams. So you can take care of business at Fenway, but once you hit the road, like, what's it matter? And that remains true. Like, I'm not discounting the fact that they could get hot and win the division. The schedule's terrible the rest of the way. The only playoff team you play until I think it's the end of September is the Yankees.
Yeah.
So, like, they should make the playoffs and they could win the division. Like, I'm not ruling that out. It just, it worries me that if they do win the division, I still am not, like, crazy confident in them going super far and making a super, like, making a super deep run. Unless they just get, like, scorching hot again, like we saw in July, middle of July, the 10-game winning streak. So, yeah, I don't know. It's a weird place to be in, honestly.
It kind of reminds me of the 2016-2017 teams, where you got into the playoffs, but you didn't feel like you were really capable of making a deep run. And obviously, you got, I think you got beat by the Astros in 17. And then the Guardians the year before. Might be flip-flopped. I don't know.
I think we're right. Because the Ortiz's last game was 16, and that was the Guardians, I believe.
Yeah. So all this to say that it does seem like you're a tier below, like, the Dodgers, the Padres, the Phillies, all those teams in the National League that I think can really make a World Series run. Do we see an addition in the offseason similar to a JD Martinez that puts them over the top? It's getting increasingly unlikely at this
point. They have that guy. They just need to extend him.
Yeah. But still, even this offseason, I think you need to bring in another big bat. And the problem is the market doesn't really have that.
No, yeah. They're not going out and giving Kyle Tucker $500 million.
Zero chance.
So, like, if I'll believe it when I see it on that front. And also, like, he's just another left-handed outfielder. Like, where do you play him? Again, it's Kyle Tucker, so you make it work if that's the route you choose to go. But we're wasting our breath even talking about it because they're not. I mean, like, I just don't know what you do for, like, it would have to be, like, a team has a surplus of first baseman. But, like, what team has a surplus of first baseman?
No one. I don't think anybody.
Like, do you make a run at Kyle Schwarber to play first base?
You could.
What do you do honestly, with Casas then?
It seems like Philly is campaigning right now to keep him there, and I would be.
So is Cincinnati.
Cincinnati,
yeah. Well, he's from that area.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, he's from Cincinnati by way of Waltham, obviously.
Of course.
But they, when the Phillies were just there, they rolled out the red carpet for him. They brought his, like, youth baseball coach in to throw the first pitch to him. They were campaigning pretty hard, which, like, I can't lie. Watching Kyle Schwarber in Great American Small Park would be a lot of fun for half the season. So he's not coming back here, I'm kind of rooting for that.
I think the other interesting one is Munetaka Murakami, who I'm pretty sure it was Heyman. Yeah, he's probably a Dodger. But he did list his four, like, likely fits or best fits. I think the Red Sox were on that list. How likely that is to actually happen? Probably not very. Especially, I talked about this earlier and probably in the offseason, but your treatment of Yoshida probably does not make you more attractive to, you know, Japanese free agents who want to come over here. Like, you've kind of screwed yourself over in that sense, too.
Right. I mean, Masataki Yoshida is not going to be on this roster come next season. He's just not. So, like, what kind of message does that send? And what does he have to say to Murakami, a guy who he played on the WBC team with and is going to play with him on the WBC team again next year? So, like, what does Yoshida have to say about the organization and the way that they handled his injury? And so last year when he complained to Cotillo about his playing time when he was just riding the bench for, like, seven games in a row in Pittsburgh. And even Murakami has not been very good from what I've seen over in Japan. And obviously the NPB is in a, like, pretty severe dead ball era, as I understand it. Like, Trevor Bauer has the highest ERA for a pitcher, and it's, like, in the mid-4s over there, which L plus bozo. Suck my dick, Trevor Bauer. But anyways, that's besides the point. But Murakami hasn't been that good. I did see that that walk-off he hit the other day where he stood in the box for, like, 45 seconds watching it go out, which was awesome. But, yeah, like I said, I just don't think he's been that good from what I've read. I mean, again, I'm not super locked into the NPB by any stretch, and I only know Munetaka Murakami because of the WBC and the subsequent WBC program and MLB The Show.
That card was so nasty.
But I just don't like, I mean, like, if there's any prominent Japanese free agent, they're a Dodger. Like, that's just how it is.
Where did the Dodgers even put him, though? Like, DH, I guess?
They could play him at third.
Ohtani. Oh, does he play third? I didn't even know that.
Yeah, he's a third baseman.
Oh, I was, the whole time I'm like, I thought he was a first baseman. No.
Oh, yeah, no. I mean, I'm sure they could play him at first, but he's a third baseman.
Oh, okay. I guess that changes my whole argument then, to be honest. Yeah, I mean, not likely. I can't keep watching Abraham Toro. Like, the splits have been really bad. He was good to start the year. Obviously, he had the little insanity run. But in end of July, early August, it has been pretty much nothing. And it's tough to say that. I think he hit a home run in the Houston series. But even still, it's like, dude, you're not the long-term solution here. Can we just move on?
Since July 1st, 31 games, 200 batting average, 259 OBP, 295 slug, good for a 554 OPS.
Yeah, there you go.
Like, it's just not getting the job done. Only 6 extra base hits.
Mm-hmm. I just don't see another solution besides calling up Campbell.
Yeah, and I know a lot of people have been like, oh, well, the metrics don't look very good down there. And like, or like, they look fine, they look better, but they're not as good as people seem to think just by looking at the surface stats. And that's fine. But at a certain point, you can't keep trotting out Abraham Toro every however many days. And at a certain point, Seidan Rafaela is hitting 138 as a second baseman. Like, I refuse to see how your optimal lineup isn't Romy Gonzalez at second base, Christian Campbell at first base.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I totally agree. And then you kind of just have to send Yoshida to hell because Duran has to play every day. And you put him at
the bench.
Mm-hmm.
Yoshida just, he rides the bench. That's what he is in this league. Masataka Yoshida in Major League Baseball is a bench player. He is. Like, that's just what he is. Like, and not very many people are looking for bench DHs. But, like, that's the situation that you've been put in. Like, that's what he is at this point. And this is a conversation that I was having with my friend Joe the other day of, like, he probably bounces around after this year to maybe one other team and then probably just goes back to the NPB. Because, what value to a major league roster does a league average DH have?
And especially one with no pop. Like, putting that guy at DH, you're good for, what? Max 10 homers a year?
Yeah, and at first people thought maybe he could pop 20. I don't think that's going to be the case. Like, I just don't see him being a 20 homer a year guy at any point, even at his peaks. It's just, he's unfortunately not a fit for Major League Baseball, or at least for this era of Major League Baseball.
No, I agree. And I think the other thing is the walk rate is significantly lower than it has been in years past. So he's not even getting on base at a super high clip. So even if he's hitting the ball directly into the ground, maybe he used to take his walks more often. Now it's like, okay, well, that's basically it. He's good for a ground out and maybe a sack fly a game.
Yeah, I mean, this year it's a 309 OBP, down from 349 last year and 338 the year before. I mean, you said it. It's just, he's just not getting the job done.
Yeah, and I mean, nice guy. Like we said, I'm sure he's a really nice guy. Every Red Sox social media clip we've seen of him, it seems like a lot of people gravitate towards him. But it's
everybody loves him. It's just, it's,
you're not, it's helping not us win games, man. No. I'm sorry. That's what it comes down to. The other interesting thing, I think the other key takeaway from this West Coast trip was Crochet had his worst start of the year pretty comfortably. Was that the first game against Houston? Yeah. So
yeah, Monday. Yeah.
Yeah. And I don't know, a lot of people were kind of hitting the panic button. I'm a little bit more like, let's wait and see, but the line was 4 innings, 7 hits, 5 earned, 1 walk, 5 Ks, only got through, like I said, 4 innings at 86 pitches. And then the game kind of got blown open by Jordan Hicks, of course, but how are we feeling on Crochet?
Yeah, I'm not worried. I mean, like, Nathan Eovaldi had his worst start of the year the same night. Like, aces, like, Skubal didn't have a great game yesterday. Like, it's a good lineup that hammers lefties. I'm not anywhere near panicked about Garrett Crochet. The people, honestly, I think the people that are dumb.
Yeah, totally agree. It's just, it's a little bit more unfortunate that you need Garrett Crochet to be on every fifth day because you didn't address your starting rotation very much at all at the trade deadline. Like, you're left right with Walker Buehler and Dustin May at the back end of your rotation. And even in front of him, Lucas Giolito and Ryan Baio have sort of come back down to earth a bit there too. So the production that you thought you were getting from Giolito and Baio has sort of lessened in the last couple weeks. And now if Crochet is not up to form as we once thought he could be for an entirety of a season, then it does get a little bit more shaky as you, and I know your schedule gets lighter, but even still, like, if these starters can't keep giving you what they were giving you when you were finding success, then it could get tough.
Yeah. I mean, they, so many times this year, they have put Garrett Crochet in a situation where he has to be the stopper.
Right.
And they did that to a certain extent. Like, I won't say he had to be the stopper on Monday in Houston, but when you look at the next two matchups, you have Walker Buehler and Dustin May in those two games. And then you're like, okay, well, shit, like, this is a series loss. We just need to make sure we don't get swept and win the season series. Because to me in Houston, that was the biggest thing. Like, I think the Mariners are going to end up winning that division. So it's just about getting the season tiebreaker with the Astros, which they did. And you look at that and you say, all right, it's Crochet. That's the one we have to win. Ultimately, he has his worst start of the season, which it seemed like it was just more of a poor game plan than anything else. He was talking about it post game, and he changed the way he attacked the hitters. I can't remember if it was he went more spin heavy the first time through, whereas normally he goes more cutter fastball heavy the first time through, and it just didn't work. Like, it's a good, like I said, it's a good lineup, one of the best in baseball against left-handed pitching. So it was a good lineup and a bad plan. It was the perfect solution. Like I said, I think the people that are pressing the panic button on Garrett Crochet are dumb.
Totally agree. And I just think we kind of have to be okay with that, because this is the most workload he's ever had in his major league career. So there's going to be growing pains. And I think we just need to recognize that. And he's still a Cy Young contender. Like, if the season ended today, I think he might win it, especially after Scooble's two bad starts. Like, my dad has been keeping an eye on this pretty closely because he has a couple pretty sizable bets riding on these in terms of payout, not in terms of like what he actually put in. But yeah, if Crochet does end up winning, then drinks are on my dad for a while.
Perfect. I love it. I also have a couple, I have a Cy Young ticket, and I have him to lead the league in strikeouts.
Yeah. Both of which are pretty feasible.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm less confident in the Cy Young one, but I think we're in good shape on the strikeouts. But yeah, I mean, every ace has bad starts.
Right.
It's just, it's a fact of the sport. Like, usually it's one in every five start is a dud. We've had one in every, 20 starts has been a dud for Crochet. Yeah, like he's thrown two duds all year. Like, it's hard to be like, oh, let's press the panic button. Like, it's such a Felger and Maz take to watch one bad Garrett Crochet start and be like, oh my God, this guy sucks. Like, literally, it's literally that. Like, oh, he had one bad start. This guy sucks, Mike. Like, what are we doing? Like, come on. Like, give me a fucking break. Like, let's use our brains for a minute. Let's act like we've watched baseball before. Like, Garrett Crochet is a top three pitcher in the sport.
And obviously, just being a starting pitcher, it gives people more time to overreact to this because you don't see him for another 5 days. And his next matchup is against the Marlins, and I feel pretty comfortable saying that it'll be a get-right start. I know the Marlins have swept the Yankees and have been playing pretty good ball the past pretty much like half of the season so far.
Yeah,
but
a month or so, yeah.
They still don't move me. I'm not going to lie.
No, I mean, they're an up-and-coming team. Their pitching staff is fine. Mm-hmm. But their offense is led by like a bunch of guys that just get hot when they get hot. Like Jacob Marcy is hot right now. Like Kyle Stowers is having a good year. But like other than that, like how many other guys on the Marlins can you even name? Agustin Ramirez.
Xavier Edwards. Otto Lopez? Is that a guy?
Otto Lopez is a guy. I don't know if he's still.
Yeah, I mean that's about the extent of my Marlins knowledge. You can't.
Yeah.
Can't say I've done a deep dive on this team. They're also 3-7 in their last 10, so I guess they aren't the Marlins, as good as I thought.
It should be a sweep. Like, it really should.
Yeah, I mean, did you have anything else you wanted to touch on, or we could just preview this?
I don't think so. The roster doesn't make any sense. I've seen enough of Abraham Toro. Stop playing Seidan Rafaelo at second. Oh, Dustin May looked good.
Yes, he did. Yeah, we should give him his flowers. Like, it was a brutal watch against the Royals, but he really did show out in this start.
He's still a brutal watch. Like,
him
being a brutal watch had nothing to do with the fact that he sucked in that first start, and everything to do with the fact that he takes fucking 10 years to throw the baseball in between pitches. Like, that's what it is for Dustin May. We saw him again go pretty cutter heavy in this one. And I'm trying to find the savant to get the numbers on it. Am I stupid? 8-12, right?
8-12.
That's when they played, right? I am stupid. The arrows are there for a reason. No, it was 8-12. Wasn't clicking far enough over to get to that game. Yeah. So a lot of cutters again, or actually, no, I am a big fat liar. He went only 18 cutters in this one, 34 sweepers, 22 sinkers. Trying to find the whiff numbers now. If you had any knowledge of the planning of this podcast, you know, I'm having a banner day here so far and it's only noon. So, 6 whiffs on the sweeper, 3 on the sinker, 2 on the four seam, 1 on the cut. It was just really effective. Like, whenever he needed to make a pitch, he was able to make one. And the velocity was up and consistent for a large portion of the game. So I'm not telling you that Dustin May is someone that you can count on for a playoff start. Like, he's going to pop things like this, like starts like this. Like, that's what he's done his entire career. But it's at least a little bit encouraging to see him do this and see the pitching lab start to click a little bit for him.
Yeah, especially because they kind of changed his whole arsenal. So to see that kind of come to fruition in his second start, and like you said, against a good team, I think is encouraging. It's just, can you do this on a consistent basis? Because we kind of need you to, especially with Walker Buehler being so inconsistent. And I mean, this is as good a time as any to say I'm pretty much out on Walker Buehler. Like, yeah, I just don't understand. Harrison. Yeah, you got Kyle Harrison, you got Richard Fitz down there, even Peyton Tolley, all of which I would rather see in that fifth starter spot than Walker Buehler at this point. Like, it's just, you're losing games for the team at this point. And what do you have, like 40-something games left? Like, I just don't want to see 8 more starts of Walker Buehler when this playoff race is kind of reaching a turning point here.
Yeah, Kyle Harrison in his last 2 starts, 10 innings pitched, 15 strikeouts, 3 hits, no runs. Still 7 walks, so not ideal. But Walker Buehler's walking the house too. So, at that point, like, just show me the guy that's going to be here moving forward. Like, at a certain point, we need to see something out of the Rafael Devers trade that's not Jordan Hicks.
Please. Yeah. Less Jordan Hicks is always good. And I think we mentioned maybe an episode or 2 ago that Jordan Hicks was only here for next year. He's actually here for 2 more years.
Yeah, 2 more.
So that's awesome.
Yeah. 2 more years on Jordan Hicks at $12.5 million sucks. This guy sucks. Like, everything about this guy sucks. And I said it on the last episode, but if Rafael Devers was such a cancer in the clubhouse that it was just the good vibes immediately turn things around for this team, then Jordan Hicks should firmly fall into that category too. And it only got more exacerbated with his comments to Tim Healy in the Globe on his pitch selection, where he said, quote, "If I'm going to be giving up these kinds of runs out of the bullpen, I should really be throwing the pitch I want to throw. It's something I had to realize. That's probably my mindset moving forward." Yeah, fucking Carlos Narvaez calling that middle sweeper. That's his fault. Hey, Jordan, throw the home run pitch. Throw the home run pitch. That's what Connor Wong's saying there behind the plate. Like this guy, I have seen so much enough of him. And like I said, I would have rather them just said, we'll eat the $25 million on Devers' contract to not keep this guy. But they like him. They liked Jordan Hicks. They pursued him as a free agent. They wanted him to be a starter. They sought him out in this deal. The Giants said, will you take the Hicks deal if we're taking on all the Devers deal? And they were like, well, we take the Hicks deal, buddy. We'll give you more for him.
I thought you'd never ask.
it's astonishing to me that this is a guy that they went out and got. And that's not to mention the shit that we've heard about him from behind the scenes. Like, not only is that stuff not great at all, but also now, like, he's in the media complaining about the catchers and the pitch selection that they're throwing. Buddy, you fucking suck. Like, it's, again, it's not them going, hey, sweeper, middle, like, throw the home run pitch. Like, you're bad. You're the one that's not executing. If you executed any of these pitches, guess what wouldn't happen? They wouldn't be taking 475 gazillion feet over the wall. Like, the pitch selection. Yeah, it was the pitch selection, not the way that you just can't execute anything and have no feel for the strike zone and have no idea where the ball is going on any given moment.
No, I'm pretty sure Carlos Narvaez is telling him to hit people directly in the ass.
Yeah.
Throw four
wild pitches in a row.
Oh, man. It's like, what do you do with him after this year? Like, is this just a DFA and you eat the 20-something?
They're going to keep him. And I heard Coley say it on two episodes of the 10. They're going to stretch him out. They're going to try to make him a starter.
Oh boy. Yeah. That's the day that I just lose my mind. Oh my God.
Something bad's going to happen if they do that. That's all I'll say. Something bad is going to happen if they make Jordan Hicks start.
I think we'll leave it there for now and preview the Marlins series here. So this is a weekend series. Game one is later tonight, 7:10, and that is Lucas Giolito versus Sandy Alcantara.
Yeah, obviously Sandy's a guy that they were hot on the tails of at the deadline, so much so that they spent the entire last hour of the deadline going after him and Joe Ryan and nobody else. Pretty much no BVP history here except for Trevor Story, who is hitting 375 in 8 ABs. Abraham Toro's 1-for-2, and that's really it. Obviously, Sandy has the Cy Young from 2 years ago, is it?
2023, I'm pretty sure.
So 2 years ago, Tommy John last year hasn't quite returned to form. Since that Tommy John, he had a stretch of a couple good starts, but since then, it's been back to bad. He had, not a couple good starts. He had two good starts. 7 innings, 4 hits, no earned against the Padres. And then 5 innings, 3 hits, no runs against the Cardinals. And then after that, which was after the deadline, against the Astros, 9 hits, 6 earned over 7. And then against the Braves, 5 innings, 7 hits, 5 earned. Walks have been a problem for him. Big time this year. So obviously not ideal with a team like the Red Sox that isn't the most patient squad in the world. Obviously not breaking any news in saying that, but it's 2.3 walks per 9 this year, which has honestly always kind of been a problem with him, but just kind of keeping it in check. But the strikeouts are also down, which is something that he hasn't. Also, I can't read it all. It's a 3.5 walks per 9 this year for him. 6.7 strikeouts per 9. Geez, I am having a banner day today. Just simple things like reading are just absolutely putting me in a body bag. 1.1 homer per 9, which isn't the end of the world, but I'd be interested to see how that plays up at a park like Fenway, which was kind of part of the reason why I wasn't super sold on giving up the assets it would take to get him. The 88 earned runs he's giving up this year in 121 innings are already the most he's ever given up in a season in his career. It's just not happening for Sandy this year for whatever reason. And obviously that reason is the Tommy John, and we'll see what he is moving forward. But this is a guy that you really should get to.
Yeah, and also just to correct myself, he won the Cy Young in 22. Okay. Which I forgot Blake Snell wanted in 23 with the Padres.
Sneakily has multiple. Like, Blake Snell is a guy you're like, oh, yeah, in both, like, leagues. Good pitcher. Like, yeah, yeah, Cy Young in both leagues. Something that only a handful of guys have ever done.
Yeah, that is pretty crazy. But yeah, I'm not super worried about Sandy either. Like, if this were a couple years earlier, like, yeah. But this year has been absolutely brutal for him. I think the Marlins were asking for way too much for him at the trade deadline. So hopefully you get to him in game one. But game two, 4:10 p.m. on Saturday, and that is Brian Baio versus Cal Quantrill, old friend. Thank God Reese McGuire is no longer with this team.
That's what I'd say, Reese McGuire revenge game.
Yeah.
But yeah, I fucking hate Cal Quantrill. I've never liked him. Like even before the Reese McGuire stuff and him, then the Red Sox trying to fight him in the parking lot of Coors Field. I've just always thought that Cal Quantrill fucking sucks. I mean, he does. Like, he's a career, 420, nice, ERA over his career. Yeah, a career 420 ERA over his career. Good speaking, Zach. This year it's been more of the same for him. It's a 509 in 106 innings pitched. Last year, though, I'm pretty sure he was really good against the Red Sox in that start.
I think so, too.
In Colorado, yeah, he just absolutely diced them up. BVP-wise, Williers 1 for 3, Alex Bregman's 0 for 8, Jaron Duran is 1 for 13, anything else notable on here? Trevor Story, 357 in 14 ABs, not doing the math out to figure out what that is, but yeah, I just, like I said, Cal Quantrill is, he's a bad pitcher on a bad team. I can take a look under the hood here quickly, although I'll tell you I'm not really expecting much. Yep, not much. Not striking anyone out, not throwing the ball hard, not missing any bats. When the ball does get hit, it gets hit very hard against him and in the air. So this is a guy who should struggle again pitching at Fenway Park. 1.4 homer 9 this year for the Marlins. So the Zach Lock of the podcast, Cal Quantrill over, I assume it's going to be 2.5 earned runs, but if it's 3.5, I like that one as well. Zach's block of the podcast, Cal Quantrill over earned runs allowed.
I like that. And then game three, the finale will be Sunday at 1:35. That is Garrett Crochet versus Jansen Junk.
Yeah, I mean, all eyes are going to be on Garrett Crochet in the start. And honestly, I don't necessarily think it's for good reason because, like I said, I'm not concerned about Garrett Crochet at all, but the narrative is going to be he needs a bounce back start against a bad team. And I have all the faith in the world that he can carve through a lineup of, like we said, Xavier Edwards, Kyle Stowers, and Stowers has been good, but Otto Lopez, Graham Pauly, Agustin Ramirez, Javier Sanoha. Like, these are guys that you only know because they have Topps Now cards in MLB The Show, because they did
exactly what I was one thinking.
Good game. Like, that's like aside from the Agustin Ramirez, Kyle Stowers of the world.
Yeah.
On the other side, Jansen Junk, he is in his first full season, came into this season with just 15 1/3 innings pitched. This year it's 75 1/3 of a 4.06 ERA. He's 6-2 on the season. He doesn't walk anybody. 99th percentile walk percentage at just 2.6%, but he's also only striking out 17% and has a whiff percentage of 18.4. The chase percentage is pretty high on him, so he's good at creating swing and miss out of the strike zone. But when the ball gets hit, it gets hit hard. First percentile average exit velo, 8th percentile hard hit rate. Another guy where the ball gets hit in the air a decent bit. So far, it hasn't turned into home runs yet. It's a 0.6 homer per 9, but we'll see how that kind of plays at Fenway. It's just a 1 walk per 9 innings. It's a guy that not everyone's super familiar with. I wasn't super familiar with him coming into this season. Actually, not super familiar. I had no idea who Jansen Junk was coming into this season. I'll take it even a step further than that. But he's been solid for them, a 299 FIP because of that low homer per 9. So we'll see what he does. But, like, I mean, obviously, with Crochet on the other side. Like, as long as you can at least get to Jansen Junk, and even if you don't get to him once you get to the bullpen, you should still be in a really good position to win this game. And if you don't, dear God.
That's where I'm at too. Like, in terms of predictions, I'm going to will into existence sweep. A sweep here. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I got a sweep.
You kind of need it. You know, it's not a must sweep series, but that would get you right back on track, I would say.
Yeah.
And then you head into two games with the Orioles. Admittedly, we listed the starters for the Red Sox, so the starters against the Orioles will be Walker Buehler and Dustin May. It's a little tough. Sick. For a two-game series, but
they face Big Sug, though, right?
Yeah. Allegedly in game two of that series, it's Buehler versus Big Sug.
Over. Second Zach Lock of the podcast, over in Walker Buehler versus Big Sug.
Love it. I'm going to that game. So that'll be interesting, but I might have to hammer the over on that just so I can watch it.
Final thought. Sorry not to jump ahead of you there.
Oh,
if you had anything else on the Orioles. Final thought, according to Sean McAdam, I don't know if you saw the Brewers alumni home run derby where Prince Fielder was just hitting fucking tanks.
Oh yeah.
apparently the Red Sox are enamored with that idea, again, per Sean McAdam, and have at least been kicking around the tires of doing an alumni home run derby. And if we got, like, they could just have Poppy and Manny take turns hitting home runs. I don't need anybody else. Just give me Poppy and Manny and let them put on a show.
Oh, like, that would be awesome. A lot
of fun. We'll see when that, if that actually comes to fruition, but that would be sick.
Yeah, I mean, imagine they bring out, like, just some random people, like Doug Mirabelli comes back or someone random.
Like, Johnny Gomes has been doing that, like, MLB X home run derby or whatever, so I assume he would participate. Like, and then I'm sure you would get guys that you don't necessarily peg as, like, home run hitters to come back just as, like, here's Dustin Pedroia.
Here, get Trot Nixon in there.
I like it. Yeah, it was like the Brewers had like Prince Fielder, was Corey Hart there. Like, I forget.
Yeah, like Keon Broxton, right?
Yeah, yep.
So, yeah.
Let me see if I can find the
an interesting list. Let me see if I can find the
list.
I'm trying to think now, like, who would I want to see? JD Martinez, he should come back.
Yeah, that's one. Let me see if I can quickly find who the Brewers brought back for theirs. What the hell? Why can I only see that they had 10 batters return? Yeah, I can't find it. But Prince Fielder was one for sure, because I saw a video of him hitting the fucking tank.
Oh, good for him, too. I mean, I know he had an abrupt ending to his career, so it's good to see him just back out there in any sense.
Yeah. Yeah, but that'd be fun. I'd love to see the Red Sox do something like that.
Yeah, maybe for next episode we put together like a wish list of people we'd most want to see. That might be fun.
Yeah, I like that. I'm in. Look forward to that next episode.
Hell yeah. That's called a tease in the radio business.
In the biz.
but yeah, I think that'll about do it for this episode. So as always, thanks so much for listening, and we'll check in with you guys again next time.
See ya.